I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Now that Martin O'Malley is poised to officially become a candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination, how will he be received by voters nationwide? The former Baltimore mayor and Maryland governor this week launched a super PAC called Generation Forward to help fund his political ambitions in the early primary states of Iowa and New Hampshire. What's the chance that O'Malley's underdog bid, already mocked on Saturday Night Live, will gain momentum against former Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders? Today on Midday, we'll talk about that with three political journalists, John Fritzy of The Sun, John Wagner from The Washington Post, and Alec McGillis of ProPublica. That's Midday after the news from NPR. And good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us on WYPR here in Baltimore, WYPF Frederick in Hagerstown, WYPO covering the Eastern Shore and Ocean City, Maryland, and streaming live online everywhere through WYPR.org. We thank you for making Midday part of your day. Coming up in the second hour today, more conversation about the Baltimore crisis, the violence in Baltimore, the aftermath of the Freddie Gray case. Wes Moore is going to be joining us, author of the best-selling The Other Wes Moore, a native of Baltimore, very dynamic man who leads a youth advocacy organization now. He'll be joining us about 1:30. And also during that hour, I want to mention that Kevin Sherrod will be here again. Kevin Sherrod, another dynamic young guy, a former drug dealer, spent 12 years in a federal prison in California, came back to Baltimore, changed his life, now focused completely on getting young men out of that life, away from the dangers of the street. And Kevin Sherrod will share his insights about the current violence in Baltimore, the surge of violence in Baltimore, another homicide overnight being reported by police today, making May the deadliest month since 1999, deadliest single month that we've seen since 1999. So Kevin Sherrod will be joining us for that conversation in the second hour. Also, the Reverend Dante Hickman, pastor of that East Baltimore Baptist Church where a nearly completed senior center was destroyed by fire during the night of the rioting, April 27th. So Reverend Hickman also be joining us. He had a very interesting and powerful op-ed in The Sun this week about where we go from here. I also want to mention this. On Friday, we have a special show for you tomorrow, 2 hours devoted to the high school classes of 2015, young men and women graduating from high schools in our area. What are some of their hopes and dreams? We'll hear from them. A great group of kids that we got together for you from a wide array of high schools in the Baltimore area, one going to the Naval Academy, one preparing to study social work, and one an immigrant who will be the first in his family to attend college among the 10 or so students that we'll have on the show with us tomorrow. And then on Saturday at 10 a.m. in Federal Hill, up on Federal Hill, Federal Hill Park, with the Inner Harbor in the background, Martin O'Malley is expected to announce that he's a candidate for president officially. The two-term Maryland governor, former mayor of Baltimore, who started his political career representing what was then the third district of the Baltimore City Council, is considered a long shot, even Maryland's top U.S. senators, Barbara Mikulski, actually our only U.S. senators, two U.S. senators, Barbara Mikulski and Ben Cardin, have pledged their support to another candidate, Democratic frontrunner Hillary Rodham Clinton. And, of course, Bernie Sanders is in this contest, too, already, the senator from Vermont. Nevertheless, Martin O'Malley this month moved a staff of 40 into a national headquarters office on St. Paul Street near Penn Station, and he has set plans to jet off from here to Iowa on Saturday, and of course, an early primary state, after his special announcement in the morning. So today on the show, we get to talk about this. We'll discuss Martin O'Malley's presidential campaign, what it might look like, with political journalist John Fritzy, my colleague from the Baltimore Sun, who covered City Hall during part of the time that there was an O'Malley administration there. He now covers national politics for The Sun. John, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me.
And John Wagner's with us. John Wagner of The Washington Post, who covered Martin O'Malley during his tenure as governor in the State House in Annapolis and has been on the campaign trail with him these last few months. John Wagner's in the studio with us. Nice to see you, John.
Nice to see you. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. And Alec McGillis will be joining us. Alec McGillis, who's moved around a little bit. He was with the New Republic. Wrote a piece, a very interesting piece, about Martin O'Malley's potential as a presidential candidate for TNR. And then he moved on to Slate. And then since then has moved to ProPublica. And so Alec McGillis will be joining us during this hour, too. And you can as well. We'd like to hear from our listeners out there. Are you a registered Democrat? Would you consider voting for Martin O'Malley for president? Because it certainly looks like he's going to make an official announcement Saturday morning. 410-662-8780. Okay, John Fritzy. So the words we use carefully in news stories, O'Malley widely expected to announce that he's running for president. There should be no surprise on Saturday morning. You don't assemble people together on Federal Hill to announce you're not running and going home to cook hot dogs, right?
Yes. That's right. And, and certainly if you're not running, you don't have trips planned to New Hampshire and Iowa. He's going to Iowa, as you noted, on Saturday, and then he'll be in New Hampshire on Sunday. And so, right, unless he's letting his supporters down very, very gently, I think it's a pretty much a safe bet. In the news business, we have to be a little careful of how we word it, but nobody thinks that he's not running.
Widely expected. And right, John Wagner, no big surprise here?
No, I think the huge surprise would be if he announces anything but he's running, though. You know, it's worth remembering in 2002, Martin O'Malley did have a press conference to announce that he was not running for governor against Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, though.
Remember it well, yeah.
If you talk to his close friends, they'll say there's a slightly different vibe this time around.
What has the vibe been? You've been out with O'Malley as he's visited various states the last few months, John Wagner. So what's that been like?
Well, he's actually being received pretty well on the ground, and there's, you know, a little bit of a disconnect between how he's faring in early polling and how he's received by Democratic activists. You know, he gives populist speeches that get crowds on their feet, but he's still not that well known outside kind of the hardcore activist base. He spent a lot of time in the last cycle going around helping other candidates, appearing at party dinners. And so the audience for that is pretty focused on, you know, those who are intensely involved in politics. And his first challenge really is just to get better known in the early nominating states.
This might be amusing to speculate about a little bit. What do we expect to hear on Saturday? What do you think would be the theme of this campaign? How do you think O'Malley would sell himself with presumably a national audience on Saturday morning from Federal Hill? I'll start with John Fritzy on that. What do you think he's going to have to say?
Well, a couple of things. I think you've seen, actually, for the past several months, O'Malley sort of pushing this idea of a generational difference. So O'Malley is 52, Hillary Clinton is 67, those of us in our 30s, that doesn't seem like a huge difference, but it is. And he will talk about sort of his effort to bring technology into Baltimore City Hall and the State House in Annapolis. I think, you know, he's been sort of really pitching this idea in his stump speech and in stories about sort of the younger generation and appealing to the younger generation of Democrats. So I think, you know, that's one of the things you'll hear. And I think if the speech is similar or has some of the same themes that he's been using across the country, you'll hear, you know, about his record in Maryland and also in Baltimore City. You know, I think it's, and John will know this better being with him every day. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see how he deals with Baltimore and Freddie Gray. Certainly early in his stump speech, even earlier this year, I always walked away with the impression that he spoke a lot more about Baltimore and sort of turning things around in Baltimore than he did even in his most recent efforts in the State House in Annapolis. So it'll be interesting to see how much he dwells on that while he's making this announcement in Baltimore on Saturday.
I had that same thought, and I'd like to hear from John Wagner on that. With the, you know, if it's a sparkling day, if it's a sunny day in May, the Inner Harbor looks so gorgeous, especially from that venue, from looking down from Federal Hill there. So that's it would be in the background, I guess, of the shot of O'Malley announcing. But it gives him a great opportunity to address some of these other issues that have come up in the wake of Freddie Gray.
Yeah, and it's certainly a stark contrast to the images that the country just saw of Baltimore. And, you know, I think for most people who aren't familiar with the city, that's probably the image they have right now. And, you know, scenes from the Wire, if I dare mention
and
that.
And the riots of April 27th.
Right. And so, you know, he was faced with this. You know, there were a lot of accusations, or at least people renewed criticism of his days as mayor and zero tolerance policing. And I think he's tried to, you know, turn this into an opportunity to say that, you know, look, I've dealt with the problems that big cities have. And he was up in New Hampshire a week or two ago and actually said, you know, that during the last 8 years, things have gotten worse for people who live in cities, and that we really need to be investing more in the infrastructure and jobs, and that there's a whole generation of young people who have, in his words, been told that they've essentially been written off by their country and by this economy, and that, you know, the next president needs to do more by them.
That's his message. He sounds those themes. But even before the riots of April 27th, John Wagner, O'Malley was speaking in sort of more populist terms, wasn't he? More populist rhetoric, similar to what we hear from Elizabeth Warren.
That's right. There were some times where it seemed very much like he was channeling Elizabeth Warren. I mean, talking about, you know, the big banks and needing to break up the big banks and a rise in income inequality. And you know, the need to reform Wall Street and return to some of the earlier regulation on Wall Street, and so, you know, that's been part of his pitch, and frankly, it's something that people who had just followed him as governor might be a little surprised to hear.
Yeah, and I wonder, from the audience point of view, is there much traction for those issues that he raises? What kind of a reaction does it get? Could you measure that?
Yeah, out in Iowa, you know, if you just look at when. There was a very memorable speech of his in Davenport, where he'll be returning actually Saturday after he appears in Baltimore for the announcement. But this was, you know, a crowd where people would get on their feet, you know, several times during the speech. And the biggest applause lines were, you know, supporting union rights and breaking up the big banks. And so a lot of that is resonating. And again, these are, you know, the diehard Democratic activists. But this is, you know, what they come to hear.
And John Fritzy, what can you say about O'Malley and John Wagner, O'Malley's organization to this point? Can you give us some insight there in terms of, you know, how is he set up? What kind of a PAC does he have, or PACs, plural? Does he have any money?
Well, sure. Let me just hit on the liberal thing, though, for a minute.
Oh, fine.
I think this is
fine.
A really interesting issue, because I think there's a it's growing. It's increasingly the case that there is limited space on the left of Clinton. That's certainly an approach he's taken. But, you know, Bernie Sanders comes in also a former mayor, I might note, and certainly far to the left of Hillary Clinton. He comes in and announces, and, you know, he's polling at 15% in Iowa right now. You know, nobody, I think, thinks Bernie Sanders is anything but a long shot, but it's interesting that Clinton has certainly moved to the left more since announcing on things like gay marriage and immigration and campaign finance reform and so forth. So she has moved more to the left, and then you've got folks like Bernie Sanders coming in who are going to occupy some of that space. And I think it's sort of an interesting question for the O'Malley campaign, like how much space is left on the left. And as John noted, he covered O'Malley more as governor than I did, but sort of looking at it from the outside a little bit, I mean, I'm not convinced that O'Malley is sort of naturally this Elizabeth Warren lefty. I think he has a lot of bona fides, a lot of check marks, boxes he's checked, same-sex marriage, minimum wage, and so forth. But he came to a lot of these things slowly, and he came to them late in his term. And I've always been interested and maybe it's because he's a governor, and a governor has to govern as opposed to a senator who can get up on the floor and sort of spout off, you know, whatever policy position they want without much consequence. But I do think it's sort of this idea of how O'Malley approaches the spectrum is interesting. Organizationally, sure. I mean, he's had a PAC set up for a long time. It's called the Yosei Can You See PAC. He's got some folks with Iowa experience involved there. He has been raising money, nothing like what we'll see from Clinton. A lot of the money has come from Maryland. He does have organization in sort of the early primary states. John actually had a piece today noting, John had a piece in the Washington Post noting today that some of his longtime supporters have created an independent PAC, an IE PAC, which will, you know, be used to run ads not affiliated with the campaign, not associated with the campaign. It certainly will benefit O'Malley. I guess it'll be interesting to see what kind of money he brings down. So far, he's have been raising a few $100,000 a quarter. It's not enough. That money is less important because that money won't actually be used for the presidential campaign. That effort will get underway once he announces.
John, you want to add something to that about your report today? It's interesting.
Sure. Damien O'Doherty, who is fairly well known in this town, I guess at least in certain circles, has a public affairs firm with Steve Carney, a former communications director to O'Malley. He has kind of taken the lead, Damien O'Doherty has, on setting up essentially a super PAC that is going to, in their words, wage an independent campaign on O'Malley's behalf in the early states. It'll be interesting to see how much money they can raise and what, you know, what really comes of this. It doesn't seem to be the traditional model of having some big donors who are able to give unlimited dollars to a PAC, a super PAC. So we'll see. I mean, I think clearly O'Malley is going to be heavily outraised by Clinton, but their take is that they're going to be much scrappier and that there are some advantages that come with being a smaller, more nimble organization.
Here's a question to ponder as we go into our break here, and I want to invite our listeners to call in and talk about this, 410-662-8780. As you look forward to 2016, really, some of the primaries are not that far off when you think about it, and the Maryland primary will be what they pushed it to, what, late April of 2016. Anyway, what are you thinking about out there? Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, now Martin O'Malley. Give us your thoughts about this. And what do you think Martin O'Malley is, sort of positioning himself for here? Because Hillary Clinton certainly looks like a formidable candidate. Martin O'Malley still, not very well known. Does he suspect that something's on the horizon with regard to the Clinton candidacy that could harm the candidacy? What do you think about this? 410-662-8780. If the election were held tomorrow, who would you vote for? Speaking out to Democrats here, because that's the first stage of this, the primary. Our toll-free long-distance number, if you want to call in from anywhere in the country, 866-661-9309. And our email address is midday@wypr.org. You can send us comments by email. You can also go on my Facebook page and post some comments there. I'll share them with listeners. Or you can tweet us at MiddayWYPR, or just my name, Dan Rodericks. I'm with John Fritzy of The Sun, John Wagner of The Washington Post, Alec McGillis of ProPublica will be joining us in a little while. But you can join us too, 410-662-8780. So I asked that question about what does O'Malley think is going to happen here? Is he just positioning himself for the next time around? People, this is how people talk. You know, is he positioning himself to be vice president? Vice presidential candidate with Hillary Clinton? And there the questions that come up about Hillary Clinton don't seem to go away. You know, they come up and they go away, then they come up again. The latest one here I have from the International Business Times, conducting an investigation. Mother Jones summarized it today, and then I went back and I read the IBT report. This report makes a connection between enormous arms deals that were conducted with countries that had made large donations to the Clinton Foundation over a two-year period. This includes transactions with Saudi Arabia, despite concerns over that kingdom's troublesome human rights record, which Hillary Clinton had criticized. She had also criticized Saudi Arabia for not taking part, for not doing its best as far as counterterrorism goes, cooperating with the U.S. on that. Saudi Arabia had contributed $10 million to the Clinton Foundation. And just 2 months before a big jet deal was finalized, a $29 billion jet deal. Boeing, a consortium of American defense contractors, donated $900,000 to the Clinton Foundation. I posted this on my Facebook page if people want to read that. I don't have time to read it all on the air today. But it's the kind of question, John Wagner, John Fritzy, that keeps coming up about former Secretary of State, former U.S. Senator, former First Lady, Hillary Clinton. And I don't think those questions are going to go away. The question is, in the primary for O'Malley, do these questions affect Democratic voters? And I don't know if we have any measure of that yet or not. John Fritzi from polling, what do you want to say about that?
Well, look, I think it's the most interesting political story, I think, of Martin O'Malley right now. And that is, look, when the email story first came out, when we first learned that Clinton was using a private email server, everybody wrote stories saying, hey, this is a big stumble for her, and let's take a look at Martin O'Malley, right? And so Martin O'Malley got a great deal of attention from that. Two things happened. The polls for Clinton didn't really move that much. And secondly, O'Malley has been reticent to go after Clinton on issues like this. He stepped up a little bit in making a few swings at her, but he's been reticent to really go after things like this, which may be what he has to do, to draw a distinction and help move those polls a little bit. But as you, I think, set up the question, you know, they are longtime allies, and he endorsed her over Barack Obama in 2008, and he may want, if this presidential thing doesn't work out, to be considered for a cabinet post or maybe a VP slot. And so I think, you know, he has got this really interesting struggle he has to deal with, which is criticize Clinton as much as he can to distinguish himself from her, but not do it so much that he angers her if she ends up being president for the next 8 years.
John Wagner.
Well, there are a couple things here. I think, you know, we're going to probably see a steady stream of Clinton Foundation stories from here until, you know, 2025, mm-hmm. if things go that far. But so far, there hasn't been a whole lot of evidence that individually any one of them have hurt her or threatening to sink her. You do have to wonder if at some point there is some cumulative weight that causes people to you know, wonder, do we really want to endure this for the foreseeable future? And maybe should we take a look at someone else who's fresher and who doesn't carry the same amount of baggage?
And if you're a Democratic voter, considering who your candidate would be against a Republican in 2016, you might say there are too many questions, too much baggage here. I don't think with all that she could beat the Republican nominee. I could see a Democrat thinking that.
Yeah, but the other side of this coin too is we're in such a hyper-partisan environment these days that, you know, I think in some ways anything that, you know, to use the cliche, that doesn't kill Clinton makes her stronger in the eyes of Democrats. Hmm. That these just become yet another attack, and there's some risk to O'Malley that if he's seen as piling on with the Republicans, that's not going to help him.
Right. Interesting. John Fritzi?
I'm sure that's, I think that's true.
Yeah. Let's take a couple of calls here. Don in Annapolis, you're on Midday with John Wagner and John Fritzi. Hi.
Hi, Dan. Enjoy your show.
Thanks.
I just wanted to ask your analysts, to what extent does Martin O'Malley bear any responsibility, or is his campaign dragged down by the fact that there are these troubles in Baltimore, and he was I don't know how long he was mayor. He was a two-term governor. Mr. Bush and Mr. Miller control the legislature in Maryland. It's a we have the anomalies of Ehrlich and Hogan, which are anomalies indeed. And yet, you know, where does Mr. O'Malley bear any responsibility for this in light of the fact that community leaders in Baltimore say they've been neglected, underfunded, and there's a general lack of support for the community?
John Fritzi, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think both the Post and the Sun have written a lot about this. Certainly, again, early in the campaign trail on the stump, O'Malley has been talking a lot about sort of things he did in Baltimore, and as John noted earlier, this thing that happened with Freddie Gray and the riots are going to be what sort of pops into, I think, people's minds most recently about Baltimore. And so I think it is an issue for O'Malley, and I think he has tried to use it to his advantage. I don't know that it's clear yet how much he can really do that. The thing I think is interesting is there is sort of this shift that has taken place. You know, when O'Malley came in, I think even Democrats were sort of talking about tough on crime and Dan, as you know, and John, you probably too, you know, the city certainly was sort of in a desperate situation when O'Malley came in. And so, you know, crime was reduced. He's absolutely right when he talks about the amount of violent crime going down in the city. But, you know, looking at what he did now in the context of Ferguson and in the context of Freddie Gray and in the context of, I think, a shift in attitudes about policing and what should be done, I think it's a problem for him.
John Wagner.
Well, one point I'll make, you know, I think the whole episode of unrest was kind of a reminder that O'Malley has a lot of enemies out there. And this, you know, and he has argued that most big city mayors do. But I mean, this episode did highlight the notion that there are people from his city and his state who were not happy with his performance for a variety of reasons and are willing to criticism. And the presidential run gives them another platform to do so. So I think that will be with him, you know, to see the extent that he becomes a contender if he does. And the more so he does, the more his record will become fodder for journalists covering the race. So we'll see how that unfolds.
A couple of interesting points here before we go to our next caller. I mentioned 1999 earlier in reference to the number of shootings and homicides that have occurred in Baltimore in this month, May 2015. We have not seen a monthly total of killings and shootings like that since 1999, since the year Martin O'Malley ran for mayor on an anti-crime, stop the violence campaign, pledging to make with his campaign rhetoric Clifton Park as safe as Roland Park. So that was 1999. So that's he came in with that theme. And I just want to mention that as a point of reference for where we are today. Also in the news today are questions about the number of arrests police are making in the last month, 6 weeks, and contrasted with the surge in violence that we've seen. And O'Malley, only a couple of years ago, I believe, John Fritzie, was challenging the mayor, present mayor of Baltimore, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, and the police commissioner for a surge in crime, a surge in violence that occurred, I think it was in the fall or the late summer of 2013, when he went on the record
exactly.
And actually, right? Didn't he?
Right.
He criticized them for not making enough arrests.
Right. There was an op-ed that he wrote in the Sun. I mean, this is
right.
Kind of what I was trying to get at, which is I think he brought a certain policing strategy and has stuck with it, even, you know, not really since Freddie Gray, but certainly I think post-Ferguson, he was still arguing that, look, he was concerned, I think legitimately, about the number of arrests going down and what that might mean for crime. You know, what the O'Malley people will tell you is that, look, this has been litigated three times. He was elected three times, once for mayor and twice for governor. These same issues came up. O'Malley did very well in the African-American community. And I think what they'll also say is that, look, the policing, the tension between the police and the community was there long before Martin O'Malley got there. So then the question is, well, how much did his policing strategy that he brought in exacerbate it? I guess it's an open question, but it is interesting, as you note, there have been some flare-ups. Not only did O'Malley write this op-ed, and he was speaking to a group where he talked about his concern about it, but, you know, Rawlings Blake, her police department came back with a report that specifically said in this report that they thought that O'Malley's policing was partly to blame for their bad relations in the community. This is back last fall. Now, you know, there was nothing really to back that up. There was no evidence, but the claim was made by a longtime supporter of O'Malley, Mayor Rawlings Blake.
Yes, and another police commissioner who was a deputy at the time Martin O'Malley was mayor, Fred Bielfeld, stepped forward and almost immediately after becoming commissioner in the city said, we are not going to arrest our way out of this problem. We're going to do targeted enforcement. You know, bad guys with guns, that was the Fred Bielfeld repeated theme over and over again. And it was effective, and they did reduce the number of arrests that occurred in the city. Of course, there was a large settlement of a case that the city had to pay out in damages for arrests of people. And we had months where there were years where there were we had months with 100,000 arrests, or was it year? Excuse me. Yeah, 2005, and a couple other years, 2004, 2006, near there in terms of the total numbers of annual arrests. And O'Malley was elected twice mayor. He'll say that. You know, I was elected in 1999, reelected, And then he ran for a governor and was twice elected there, and with people fully knowing where he stood on crime. Let's take a call here. This is Jack in Baltimore. We welcome you to the Midday Show. Hi, Jack.
Hey, Dan. How are you doing?
Pretty good. What did you want to say about this?
Well, first, I'm going to vote for Bernie Sanders. Secondly, I don't think O'Malley should show his face in Baltimore. I can't believe the gall that he's trying to hold some kind of rally in a city that he abandoned. And I think there's plenty of Irish pubs that are out there that could use a band, and maybe he should go back to doing that.
How do you feel Martin O'Malley abandoned the city?
He left. He's only been interested in going up to the next, it's like a basketball coach that has his high school team, then he goes to college, then he does the NBA. He's seemingly wanted to be president since he ever first emerged on the radar. He doesn't have any of the credentials to do that, but we'll see.
Okay, thank you, Jack. As John Wagner noted, he was elected in 99. It was just about 2 years later, just about 2 years later that he had to announce that he wasn't running for governor, because he could have run in 2002. Everyone was aware of his ambition then, but he had only been on the job for a couple of years. He came very close to jumping in there, but deferred to Kathleen Kennedy Townsend that year. We're going to defer to a break here on Midday. 410-662-8780. Do you agree with what Jack just said? Oh, Martin O'Malley abandoned the city. What do you think about this event that's coming up on Saturday morning? And would you consider voting for Martin O'Malley for president against, the current candidates, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders? John Wagner with us from The Washington Post. John Fritzy and Alec McGillis will be joining us from ProPublica. 410-662-8780. Today's lunch for our midday guests provided by Eddie's of Roland Park, offering gourmet sandwiches, soup, salads, and desserts at its two stores on Roland Avenue and North Charles Street. Personal shopping, catering, and gift baskets are available at eddiesofrolandpark.com. Dan Roderick's here with John Wagner from The Washington Post, John Fritzy from The Baltimore Sun. Before we go on, I'd like to take some more calls. I always think of Albert Ritchie. Albert C. or Albert W. Ritchie? Somebody help me out with the middle initial on Albert Ritchie, will you? For whom Ritchie Highway is named. He was a governor of Maryland. And I believe, I don't know, Fritzy, if you had a chance to check this out, or John Wagner. Is he the last Maryland governor who was a candidate for president?
The last governor. There was, of course, Alan Keyes ran three times as a Marylander.
I don't mean a mere Marylander. I meant someone who actually was governor. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe Albert C. Ritchie is in Charlie, I think he ran in 20. He was put up in 24, maybe, and I think he lost to FDR in 32. I believe my history is right on that.
That's good, John. Very good, and he was a bachelor too. So how do people in Maryland feel about O'Malley? What was his last approval rating, John Wagner? Do you remember?
It's been pretty lukewarm, to probably be generous. But it's a fairly common phenomenon that your home state crowd is usually the most skeptical when you run for president, particularly if you come from a state where it's been a while. In a previous life, I covered John Edwards' 2004 presidential campaign. That was the less scandalous of the two. For the Raleigh News and Observer, and the people of North Carolina thought he had no business, running for president, and he was a freshman senator. What was he thinking? And part of it is that you see your guy, warts and all, over the years, and just don't think of them in the same league as the esteemed leaders in Washington.
It's an interesting story to look into. What were George W.'s polling numbers in Texas when he ran for president, or Bill Clinton in Arkansas?
Yeah, I know there was a lot of skepticism about Clinton in Arkansas, and I went through this exercise with a pretty well-known pollster a couple months ago, and he made a pretty convincing case that this is almost a universal phenomenon. I mean, it can change over time, And if O'Malley were to start doing well in Iowa and New Hampshire, I think people in Maryland would start to see him very differently.
John Wagner of the Washington Post, John Fritzy on the phone with us, who's covering national politics for the Baltimore Sun. And Alec McGillis is joining us now, I'm happy to say. Alec McGillis, who once worked for the Sun, once worked at the Post, now at ProPublica as their chief political correspondent. Nice to have you with us, Alec.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
Well, Governor Meh, as you referred to him, actually was a headline for an essay you wrote, very good essay, provocative piece for the New Republic a couple of years ago about Martin O'Malley as a presidential candidate. It looks like it's actually going to happen, Alec.
It is. I can't really believe it, but it apparently is.
So what do you think O'Malley's up to here? Is he a serious candidate? Is there a possibility that the cracks we see in the Hillary Clinton maybe become larger? She collapses. He thinks, hey, I'm right there if they need me. Is that what he's thinking?
I really don't know. I'm kind of puzzled by this, actually. I mean, he's trying to run to Hillary's left, and he's been an unlikely sort of liberal tribune all along. He's a very unlikely person to take that slot, running as the sort of champion for the liberal wing of the party. And because he's just not, you know, he's quite a good governor, quite a good mayor, but, you know, he's more of a, by his own admission, more of a technocratic, utilitarian kind of guy, and not the kind of guy who you think would kind of stir liberal passions out on the national campaign trail. But then added to that, now you've got the whole Freddie Gray thing really complicates his run as the liberal tribune even more. I mean, the thing that that O'Malley's most known for really is his main accomplishment, and the one that he was proud to talk about for, you know, many years until recently, was the fact that he had made a real effort to bring crime and homicides under control in Baltimore, and he did that, of course, through you know, sort of basically a zero tolerance approach that he took from New York and elsewhere, and, you know, he had some measure of success with that. But that whole approach of policing is now very much under scrutiny, and especially under scrutiny on the left. And so there's this real kind of cognitive dissonance to have Martin O'Malley running as the guy who's supposed to sort of claim the mantle of the liberal champion, people who are not satisfied with Hillary, to Hillary's left, while at the same time his main accomplishment is something that's become almost kind of anathema to many liberals.
He can't get away from that. Let's be serious for a moment. Alec is being serious. If you are... What do you identify O'Malley with? Playing, he's the mayor of Baltimore who plays guitar with a Celtic rock band. Okay, we know about that. It's zero tolerance policing. It's getting the homicide rates, the violent crime in Baltimore under control by abating situations on street corners with arrests, and 100,000 arrests in a single year. That is, Alec is correct. That is what he is identified with. And then you push the clock up to 2015, and it's a legitimate question, a legitimate point that has contributed to this, to these fissures in the police community relations in Baltimore. So, Alec, I think you're right. I mean, he has to live with that. Does that hurt him? I mean, there are some Democrats who the advice was move to the middle, be tough on crime, support the death penalty. That was the lesson that came out of the Clinton era, actually. That kind of Democrat, be in the middle, appropriate those themes from Republicans, and they can't call you a liberal.
Right. I mean, he was a Clinton Democrat in that sense back when he was mayor. And now he's running as the challenger to Clinton from the left. I mean, it's all very kind of odd if you look at it that way. He goes way back with the Clintons. In fact, this is someone who decided to back Hillary Clinton in 2008 when a whole lot of other people were going to the exciting new guy Obama. But he stuck with Hillary, and now he's going to be the main challenger to her. It's very unusual.
Alec, while you're with us, let's take a couple of calls from our listeners here in Baltimore. Brandy in Pigtown wanted to say something about this. Thanks for calling, Brandy.
You're welcome. I just like to piggyback on this theme of Martin O'Malley's cognitive dissonance, but I have a comment to make on a lighter note, since everybody else has so eloquently made comments about Martin O'Malley in regards to Freddie Gray. I'd like to comment about his performance as an executive of this city. And I think it goes to another example of his cognitive dissonance, and that was during the snowstorm of 2002, 2004. Just bear with me for a second. It was a storm so bad that there was no place to put the cars, and the hardworking people of Baltimore were out in the streets with shovels, shoveling the streets themselves by hand. And the only thing that Mayor O'Malley seemed to be able to do was to send out parking enforcement and give everybody in my neighborhood a ticket. And I know that that's a trivial thing, but I think
it's the thing you remember, Brandy. I'm not sure it's trivial. It's the thing you remember.
It is the thing I remember, and I think it's just consistent with his general disconnect from the people who he's elected to serve, which previous callers have already commented on. And like them, I do feel that he abandoned the city while in office and had his sights set more on his own personal ambitions. And I'll take your comments off the air.
Okay, Brandy. Anybody want to comment on that? Alec or John Fritzy, John Wagner? You're going to leave that
one? Wasn't it a Chicago mayor who lost re-election because of a snowstorm? Who was that guy? It was a Chicago mayor who lost re-election because of a snowstorm. Look, it's a common,
Jane Byrne won,
Yeah, people are, right, exactly. Yeah, people are upset about that. I don't know. Look, I mean, I think that's hard to assess. I think O'Malley did do a lot of things for the city. I think there was, redevelopment that went on. I think when he talks about, which you can take and believe or not, but when he talks about his sort of technocrat younger generation stuff, he's talking about CityStat, the program where they, model everything and look at it. Though, interestingly, that program is sort of slowly, seems like it's not as enforced as it once was. But I don't know. I mean, I think reasonable people can disagree about he's always been charged with being ambitious. I think anybody who is running for president is. I think reasonable people can sort of disagree about, what he did for the city and
I don't think anyone would ever use the word incompetent. I think actually you use the word competent when you describe O'Malley, Alec McGillis, on that. I would think that that's an adjective O'Malley gets from when he was mayor and when he was governor.
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's a very good word for him, even capable. I mean, he's quite capable. To the point, though, of whether of sort of how he's viewed now in Maryland and Baltimore, I do think there's something that goes beyond just the usual fact that a lot of governors tend to sort of, familiarity breeds contempt, and a lot of locals have a hard time picturing their governor as president. In O'Malley's case, what sets him apart a little bit is that he has left the state in the hands of someone of the other party. He was not able to get his designated successor elected to replace him, which is pretty notable. And in Texas, George Bush just handed the reins to Rick Perry, and so you have his legacy is somewhat in flux right now, right in his home state, because he was so sort of lukewarmly popular when he left that he wasn't even able to help pull his guy across the finish line. And so you're seeing now with some of these cuts in school funding and other consequences, real consequences for Baltimore and Maryland, because the other party is now in charge in the governor's mansion.
A comment following up on that on Facebook from Janet, who says, "My first choice is Bernie Sanders with Hillary as second. I blame the dislike of O'Malley here for giving us Larry Hogan. So the only way I'd vote for O'Malley is if he ends up to be the Democratic nominee. I don't see that happening," she says, "luckily." John Wagner?
Yeah, I think in some ways, you need to look at this through the prism of what voters in Iowa and New Hampshire are thinking. And, well, clearly it would have been better for Martin O'Malley to have Anthony Brown in office and continuing his accomplishments and achievements and having that continuity. It's not really something that's discussed out in the early states that much. I mean, I think the activists there pride themselves on doing independent evaluations of candidates and, to be frank, they don't really care that much about what Marylanders think.
Well, I think Alex was talking about how Marylanders feel,
right?
As reflected in the last phone call,
right? Yeah. Which will become relevant to O'Malley in some places along the way. I mean, clearly you want to have validators from your home state telling reporters what a great job you did, and not knocking you at every turn. But, you know, the reality is Maryland voters aren't going to play a huge, huge role in this process. And if they do, things will be going so well for O'Malley at that point that I think they will see things in a very different light.
Interesting. Here's Karen in Baltimore with a comment or a question about Martin O'Malley. Go right ahead, Karen.
Hi. So the two things that puzzle me right now is why Ben Carson isn't waiting to be appointed to Surgeon General, which is the job I actually knew him back in the 1980s as a nurse at Hopkins, and that's the job he's really suited for, and why Martin O'Malley isn't running for senator, because I think that's a job he'd be suited for. I have kind of a meh reaction to O'Malley. I think he's competent and everything. I feel that he's probably running because he's trying to position himself to be her Hillary Clinton's vice presidential candidate, and or because there's going to be so many candidates. Actually, no, there probably is a lot of candidates. Actually, the Democrats aren't so deep. I think that's the main reason, I guess, it's ambition. I don't think he'd be the worst president. I don't think he'd be the best president. I do think a prediction, though, a lot of people like me who are kind of independent voters, for me, if there's a reasonable moderate Republican, it's time for that now.
Okay,
I mean,
Karen.
Karen, we're getting into another field, but
we're getting short of time. I want to get your questions answered. Let me go to John Fritzy on why O'Malley's not running for U.S. Senate, with Barbara Mikulski announcing her retirement. And the second question for John Wagner would be: does it make sense for him to be a vice presidential running mate with Hillary Clinton, given where he's from Maryland, she's from the East Coast? Let's go to John Fritzy first on the question of the Senate.
Well, look, O'Malley shot that down pretty quick. I think there was I was certainly interested to see if he was going to do that. I think, you know, look, I think he's been gearing up for this for a long time, even against difficult odds with Clinton. This is sort of what he's been thinking about for a long time. I think, you know, it may set him up for something else in the future. I don't know. But I do. I also think that O'Malley he had sort of sailed from Baltimore by the time the Senate race came open, and not to say he cut ties by any means, but I think that he was looking at this presidential thing, and I think you know, they worked very quickly to shut down any talk of him running for Senate.
Thank you, John. And John Wagner, on that question of, you know, how Hillary Clinton would pick a vice presidential running mate, does Martin O'Malley make any sense for her?
Well, not kind of from the traditional old school model of looking at, you know, states you need to pick up. If Maryland's in play, then the election's lost for her.
Right.
But, you know, there are other things you can look for in a running mate. And whatever else you think of O'Malley, he has proven himself to be a very strong campaigner.
And organizer.
He's also well-versed in criticizing Republicans. And so from that standpoint, you could see him in the VP role.
Alec, you want to say anything about that?
Oh, I could see a case for making a case for him as vice president. What is me very interesting to watch is how he, you know, plays the whole very delicate question of how tough to be on Hillary in running against her. Back in the day, of course, that was a standard model. You could run in the primaries and then hope to be the VP to the eventual winner. But one does get the sense that the Hillary and the Clinton camp is simply more sensitive to rivals and even sort of friendly criticism than past front runners have been. And so would she be willing to make him her vice presidential running mate or even just someone in her cabinet if he spent, you know, some number of months criticizing her with varying degrees of subtlety? To the point of him running for the Senate, I think another factor for him in that regard is that he simply is not a legislative type, right? This is a guy who kind of got bored back when he was in the city council and really fancies himself more of an executive and a manager.
Alec McGillis from ProPublica. Nice to have you on the show again, Alex. And please come back and visit us when you have a chance when you're in Baltimore.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And John Wagner from The Washington Post. Nice to have you visiting with us in the studio today. And we'll continue to watch for your stories about Martin O'Malley.
Well, thanks. Thank you.
Thank you, yeah. And John Fritzy will watch for your stories, too. John Fritzy from The Sun, who's covering this as well. So 10 a.m. Saturday morning, it's likely to be nationally televised announcement on C-SPAN or CNN or one of those, you think?
Maybe MSNBC.
MSNBC. Thank you, John Wagner. Thanks, John Fritzy.
Thank you.
All right, and thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the first hour of Midday. We're going to take a break here for lunch from Eddie's, and then we'll have the second hour of our show, so please stick around for that.